books and news beats, hear that piano rail. Take down the fax ace, write up the tale. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet, if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace. Trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street.
Well, good day, as our friends in Australia might say. Welcome to Left Turn on Bird Street. I'm Dan Garley, and this is my radio compatriot,
Tom Nato. And what's with the foreign geography and big words, compatriot?
Well, you know that we are now webcast from our flagship station, KRBS 107.1 in Oroville, California. Who knows who's listening down under? Be nice to know that, wouldn't it?
Sure, but down under, up there, or out wherever, if they're in here listening to us, you're in some exotic, faraway place, please don't call us collect.
As for the big words, Tom, compatriots, Tom, is not a big word. It just means friends, neighbors, compadres, amigos.
Actually, it means fellow countrymen, but I'm not the kind of quibble. So what are we going to do today?
Well, we're going to talk about a lot of different things today. You know, it's mid-October. We have the Fitzgerald indictments likely to be handed down. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about Harriet Myers. We're also going to talk about a topic near and dear to our heart called, patriotic journalism?
Oh, yes.
So anyhow.
That's paid for.
Paid for journalism, exactly. But before we get to that, we also are going to talk to a guest because here we are in mid-October and actually late October, and hurricane season is still going strong. Wilma just hit Cozumel off the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, and it's bearing down on South Florida. And it's been a very active hurricane season, not only with Wilma and obviously Katrina. My understanding, this is the most named hurricanes and tropical storms since, I believe, 1933, or I think even since they've been keeping records since the 1850s. So we have a guest, and maybe, Tom, you can introduce who our guest is.
Well, our guest is Bob Ulanowicz, a professor at, connected with the University of Maryland and the Chesapeake Biological Laboratory. He actually knows what he's talking about.
Unlike us, who are just kind of armchair quarterbacks or armchair commentators.
I only know what I read in the newspapers.
Right. And you and Bob go quite a ways back, and Bob has been gracious enough to appear on our show several times over the last 2 years, because we've been on the air 2 years now.
Right. Well, Bob, do you understand that you're on the air and we're talking about the weather? That's a hot topic.
It sure is. It's been getting hotter lately, as a matter of fact. Good to hear you, Dan. Good to hear you, Tom.
Likewise, Bob. Thanks for joining us today. Before we start, what's the weather like in Maryland? Are you guys facing any hurricane possibilities there?
Well, right now it's rainy, but that's a normal cold front. Wilma, as you said, was supposed to hit South Florida, and it doesn't look like it's going to hit the Outer Banks, so it probably won't get up this way and affect us that much.
Well, that's good. We're glad to hear that for your sake.
Well, Bob, not only is it the most... or he says it's the most letters of the alphabet that have been chewed up by the storms this year. But this is the third Category 5, or at least was for a while, hurricane in this season. They used to be unusual. Now there don't seem to be. What's going on?
Well, there are two things at work here, and I think it's necessary to keep them separated. One is the frequency of hurricanes, and the second is the magnitude of hurricanes. The frequency of hurricanes actually occurs cyclically. I'm not a meteorologist, and I don't know the details, but each of the ocean basins has a certain particular cycle in terms of temperature, winds, and convection, and so forth, and we are in the that part of the cycle in this part of the North Atlantic where we have lots of hurricanes. So this is not something that was unpredictable and probably is not related with global warming or anything else. On the other hand, there's the problem of the intensity. And the intensity of the hurricane has to do with how much energy difference you have between the very upper layers and the surface of the sea. That apparently has changed because the surface temperatures are rising, so that the intensity of the hurricanes has been getting greater, possibly, very likely, as a matter of fact, because of global warming. So there are two things at work, and the causes behind the two things are different.
Well, there's one other aspect of this. They're coming one right after the other, and so the reaction time to them is changing things. It used to be that you'd get a stiff storm and then have the rest of the season to clean up. Now they're coming one after the other. How is that affecting people in, for instance, Florida, where this would be the second one to hit?
Yeah, well,
and you live there.
Because if indeed there's a lot more energy between the top and ionosphere and the sea surface, some things that would have only become depressions, tropical depressions, are getting a little more energetic and then qualifying as tropical storms. Well, as far as Florida goes, they're a little bit weird. We have a son who lives in Boca Raton, for example, and they, of course, get a little weary, but they take these hurricanes very seriously, and they do follow the evacuation orders down there. Some of the areas on southwest Florida, which is due to be hit now, really haven't fully recovered from Hurricane Charley last year, so that their economy, I think, is going to be quite affected by it. Of course, it may actually cool some of the growth in those areas, which have been somewhat overheated itself, figuratively speaking.
Bob, you know, this hurricane season, I've learned more about hurricanes and meteorology than I ever have in my life. And I want to go back to a point that you made earlier, is that a lot of the intensity from this year's hurricanes is due, my understanding, is due to the fact that the Gulf of Mexico, the water temperature has been very warm there. So, you know, for a layperson, you like I said, you kind of said it, if you could maybe elaborate a little bit more. The water temperature is what makes the hurricanes more intense. Is that correctly? Is that a correct statement?
Yes, that's correct. It's really the difference in temperature between the water temperature surface and the outer space, which remains the same, of course. So that if your water temperature rises, you've got a lot more energy to feed these hurricanes. And the Gulf of Mexico, once a hurricane gets in there, it almost never reverses and goes back out. It's virtually sure to make landfall somewhere. So it gets into the Gulf of Mexico with highly elevated temperatures, and it grows, and it's got to hit land somewhere.
Right. So, you know, Bob, you know, if we're, I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here. There's a large number of people out in the, and I'll use this word loosely, in the scientific world, maybe not even a lot. There's some people in the scientific world who claim that global warming is just a cyclical thing, and it doesn't have anything to do with what's, you know, happening in the environment. You know, as a layperson, how can you refute that? You know, because let's just be frank. From my understanding, the large energy companies fund a lot of this so-called scientific research that says that global warming is, to use their terms, is junk science. As a layperson, you get into a discussion with somebody, how can you refute that? Because it's two non-scientific people talking about a scientific topic. I mean, is there a way that, in layperson's terminology, we can refute that?
How could a layperson refute that?
Well, I'm sorry, there was a pause and I didn't know what. Well, I think the thing is to look at the temp. There's been a lot of monitoring of temperature since about the middle of the 19th century, and it's remarkable in looking at those temperatures how the increase has occurred in the last 40 or 50 years. Now, the problem is we don't know. Back in the future, we don't know the exact temperatures. We can only infer them from things like fossil vegetation and rates of sedimentation, et cetera, et cetera. So we can only indirectly guess temperature. But by all indices, it seems as if this rise in temperature over the last half century or so is unprecedented by virtually any of these indirect estimates.
Bob, you're familiar with Pascal's Gambit? That's the theory that you can't prove that there's a God, but you're better off if you act as if there were. And you know that theory.
I'm sorry, Tom, you're breaking up.
I
didn't get the whole question.
You're familiar with Pascal's Gambit?
Oh, Pascal's Gambit.
Gambit, yeah.
Yes.
Right, and so...
You should always assume the worst and act accordingly, yeah.
Right, well, why are scientists, unless they're paid, refusing to sort of work on that same assumption that it looks like and it could really be harmful, so we should act in a way that would protect us from it the most?
Yes, I couldn't disagree with you at all. As you say, some people get their grants from certain areas and will follow what particular party line.
So Bob,
being a scientist, you won't call it bribery.
Right. So Bob, I'm shocked to hear this, that people might actually get paid to turn out research that meets the specific...
No, they're not paid, Dan. They're granted. It's a grant.
Granted, that's right. I gotta get my words right here. But really, I guess maybe what you could, you know, if you're a lay person and you're into a discussion with somebody, I guess would it be, you know, from a lay person's point of view, a good argument to say, well, you need to look at the source of the funding for this contrary, you know, the anti-global warming scientific research being done. And a lot of that, my understanding, is coming from grants from energy companies.
Yes. I don't get any of that money.
I'm glad to hear that.
That's why you can be in
there. But we're living in a postmodern era, and one of the things about science is that there's hardly any such thing as a neutral question anymore. Now, this isn't so bad in the physical sciences, such as meteorology, but when you get into the biological sciences, you get really a mix of ideology in how the questions are posed and how they're pursued and so forth. But we're beginning to see that here, you know, because there are political and economic problems at stake, lots of money, lots of directions at stake. We're seeing that that some people, if the issue is unclear, will simply lean in a particular direction. And we're dealing with uncertainty here. We're dealing we see this temperature rise, and the question is, has it happened before for other natural reasons, or is this something that is truly man-made? And there is some uncertainty. You're going to see people leaning in different directions.
Now, Bob, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit, because you brought up a point that kind of, and from interviewing you several times, piqued my curiosity again, and we've talked about this in the past, but and we didn't let you know we were going to interview you on this, but I do need to ask you a question on this. I, you know, knowing you for some time now, I know that you're a person who practices your faith on a regular basis, and you're also a scientist, so that puts you in a kind of a very unique position, because you're a scientist who has a strong practice of your faith. You know, how do you view the discussion going on now about the intelligent design versus the evolution that seems to be, you know, taking place? Well, it is taking place in places like Kansas, and I know there's a school district in Pennsylvania where there's a court case going on as we speak about the introduction of intelligent design into the classroom. From a scientific point of view, how do you view the intelligent design debate, I guess?
Okay, Dan, actually, you don't put me much on the spot at all, because I've given this an awful lot of thought, as you probably have inferred, because being a person who believes and also being a scientist causes you to pit one on the other all the time, and they can actually inform each other, believe it or not. But anyway, as regards intelligent design, I think it's very important that we separate two things. We separate the facts of evolution from the metaphysical assumptions surrounding evolution. Now, the facts of evolution, I think, are rather incontrovertible as far as a scientist goes. And I don't, you know, as a scientist who can reconcile these facts with my faith, I don't have any problem with my children being taught the facts of evolution. What I would worry about, however, is if this the facts of evolution were presented as a Trojan horse for what is called metaphysical naturalism, which is essentially that everything is material and mechanical and nothing else. Because that's not the only metaphysics upon which you can attach the facts of evolution. So I think it's very necessary to make that particular distinction. And I think that most of there's some young Earth creationists who just simply won't accept the facts. But I think the great majority of religious people are willing to accept the facts, but feel very uneasy about the metaphysical assumptions that go with it, and which conflict with their own particular faith. And I think that's where the issue is right now. Now, I can get into intelligent design in more detail if you want me to.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. As I see it, I work in an area which is called self-organization theory. And there are two major names in intelligent design. One's name is Michael Behe, and I think that is Dembski. I can't remember his first name, but Behe and Dembski. Anyway, what they are saying, it's a little difficult to explain, but the idea is that there are two types of complexity, if you will. One type of complexity is ordered organization, like a Baroque type of complexity, and the other type of complexity is chance, very stochastic, very arbitrary, if you will. And Dembski talks about these two types of complexity, and he focuses on one, the first one, the organized complexity, and he says that there's certain irreducible complexity that cannot be explained by the normal Darwinian mechanisms, and therefore there must be a designer. Well, one thing that I don't think Behe and Dembski have looked at is self-organization theory, because there are people out in Berkeley, for example, some of us who've been working in self-organization theory, who feel that in time, self-organization theory will fill in a lot of those gaps, if you will, for organized complexity.
Does that mean that there's evolution is still... Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Does that mean that, or can we infer from that, that evolution is not complete, and then there's more stages to go through that will fill those gaps?
I'm sorry, Tom, I think you're breaking up. I think there's a squelch problem.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Dan, you asked that question.
I can't repeat that question. Let me ask you another question. Are you hearing me okay, Bob?
I'm hearing you fine, Dan.
Okay. So would it be fair to say, you know, that... the creation or the intelligent design theory that's trying to be that several in the religious right, in my opinion, are trying to ramrod into school, into many school curriculums, is really an attempt to introduce religion into the curriculum of science. And would it be better if they wanted to teach this, if they perhaps taught it in a theology or perhaps in a social studies environment?
Yeah, I would agree with you completely, Dan, that it shouldn't, the limitations of science are something that should be handled outside of what is accepted as normal science. And I think it is worthwhile looking at what they're doing outside of the science classroom, in philosophy or social sciences and so forth, because there's a great deal to discuss. I have my own particular direction in all of this, and it's very different from intelligent design.
And what is your direction? But before you get to that, I wanted to ask one question. How sincere do you think the intelligent design people are?
We're breaking up again.
Tom, you need to come around this side here. We're having a few technical problems. Tom wants to ask Bob a question here, so go ahead.
Bob? Can you hear me this?
Okay. I can hear you now, Tom.
Oh, okay, I get it. I'm speaking through the microphone. Yeah. Okay. Of this intelligent design, how much of this is sincere, and how much is they worked on it for several years, found a position they can take that is difficult to
reply to, and they're using that to, as a result, push along their own agenda of religion in schools.
Yeah, I do believe that they're sincere about having discovered a gap in so-called neo-Darwinian explanations. That doesn't mean that something else won't come along, like what I call self-organization theory, and fill that gap. Now, once you have some confusion, then, well, maybe we can introduce religion. I feel that religion and science are autonomous to a degree. They can inform each other, but that we shouldn't try to teach one as the other.
But you know, lawyers do this all the time. When they are dealing with a jury, defense lawyers are always trying to introduce doubt, whether it's a legitimate doubt or not. And that's what I'm driving at, is that some people use facts or the combination of facts to put forward a position that only for the purposes of creating a doubt, not for the purposes of showing anything.
Yeah, I think even they've even almost gone on record to that extent, that they are trying to show that science is not absolute certainty and so forth, because many people do look at science as absolute certainty. So I think that is part of what they want to do.
Well, Bob, thanks very much for joining us today. We appreciate you taking time from your busy day to talk to Tom and myself on Left Turn on Bird Street. And are there any closing thoughts you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, I guess I didn't really talk about the second side of that.
No, let's give him a chance. Go ahead, please do.
There's lots to be said there, and we'll say that for another talk.
I'd actually like to get it today, because I don't like to leave the door open but not closed, and I intended to ask you just a moment ago. So, what is the other side of it? What is the other side?
I think that the intelligent design people are looking at the wrong thing. Rather than looking at this organized complexity, one should look at the disorganized complexity, because I think what you will find there is not everything can be explained in terms of probability theory. There is truly an irreducible chance is at work in the world, and this causes what is called a veil, an epistemological veil that you can't go beyond, so that materialists can say, hey, there is absolutely nothing beyond this, whereas religionists, theists can elect to say, but there is something going on beyond that. Nobody can test that, and it becomes down to a matter of faith. Hopefully, once we see that, we can respect one another's opinions on it.
Well, there's an element of entropy echoing in what you're saying, that something organizes itself into non-being, or to a final answer, I guess the parallel would be. Am I just imagining that?
No, you're not. The truth of the matter is that you need chance and you need arbitrariness in order to have natural creativity. Just leaving aside supernatural creativity, just to have natural creativity, you need that chance. And it's been much neglected in science.
Well, any writer or painter will tell you that oftentimes it's the mistakes that lead them into their greatest works.
Absolutely, I'll tell you that. My entire theory, my entire books, I can point back to the mistake I made, and it led me down a different pathway.
And what was her name?
Very good. For the record, I'll just say it was my wife, Marika.
Good answer. Well, Bob, now we can say thanks for joining us today. We certainly appreciate you spending time with us. We know you're very busy, and we'd like to invite you to appear once again sometime in the coming months.
My pleasure, Dan. My pleasure, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye, Bob. And that was Dr. Bob Ulanowicz, professor of everything to do with ecology and environment and science in general.
Yeah, and Bob has appeared on Left Turn on Bird Street three or four times over the last couple years. So we certainly appreciate his input, and of course we'll have him back on the program in the coming months. But it's an interesting point that Bob mentioned about mistakes, and that you brought up actually, is that frequently it's the mistakes that artists or writers or even scientists that make
a path.
Yeah, that bring to a new path. And that actually, I wouldn't say it was a mistake, but we didn't intend to talk to Bob about the arguments over intelligent design being pushed in the schools. But it does bring up, I guess,
well,
that kind of illustrates the point.
Intelligent design, you would think that intelligent design would lead to intelligent beings, right?
Right.
Why is it that we have so many of the opposite?
I think that's the
argument that entropy is working against them.
That's true. That's I never thought of it in that terms, but yeah, if God was so intelligent, why is he creating people like, say, George W. Bush
or me
or him or me for that matter. The only difference is, though, is that God chose George W. Bush to be president, and he didn't choose either one of us to be president. We're a couple of schlups
He likes to talk to him better at night when he's lying in bed than he likes to talk to you or me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she.
Yeah, that's right. Because we know who rules the roost, don't we, Tom?
Exactly.
Anyhow, now getting, just to end up this segment, you know, the intelligent design is, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people would agree with me, lay people and people particularly in the scientific community, it's nothing more than an attempt by the religious right to really brush aside science and put theology in the place of science. And by replacing science, just think of it in these terms, by replacing science with a theology, we can do away with any discussion on, say, global warming. That's how we tie the whole thing up. And you know, we really need to think about it, is that if we dismiss scientific research, scientific discovery, how are we going to come up with, say, solutions to the avian flu?
But, you know, the real factor in this that's disturbing is the purpose of this, I think, is to create that unidentified third party.
Yes.
Which you say, well, hey, it's not me making these rules. God, that guy over there, he's really making the rules. So don't blame me. Blame him. Just as we say, well, it's not us that are causing all the ports to be closed, and you're going to be searched going onto the plane, and you don't have any freedoms anymore, and don't worry about us listening in on your telephone, because it's really because of Al-Qaeda over there.
Right.
And that's why they didn't, and I might believe this is why they didn't capture the guy to begin with. If they took him away, they would have to be responsible for whatever happened after this. But they can now blame him, just as they can, this other party can blame the third party unassociated.
Right. So anyhow, well, thanks for joining us. This is Left Turn on Bird Street, and we haven't reminded you to take a look at our blog, which is on, it's not on the internet, it's on the internets, which you can find our blog located
Internuts
at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. And we have regular postings there, and we're going to finish up this segment, but I just want to say, give Tom a little plug here. Tom put a posting on the internets, or on our blog site the other day, and I went and looked at our site, and actually Tom's posting was linked on a was linked by the Washington Post, actually. So Tom can now say, go to his grave saying that he's appeared on WashingtonPost.com anyhow.
Well, not only that, but this, I'm almost got a clean sweep, because I have the New York Times.
Right, right.
Now I've got the Washington Post.
Right, right, right.
I wrote for a long time for the San Francisco Chronicle.
Right.
And I'm shooting for the L.A. Times.
All right.
And if I do that, I might go for Chicago Tribune or the Dallas paper, but
well,
I don't know about that.
Well, what about the Wall Street Journal? I know we don't like the editorial page, but it's a great newspaper, the Wall Street Journal. We need to be linked by them, Tom.
Jeez, I can't think of anything that I would know about that they would care about.
Well, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, and we're heard every other week on KRBS from 8 until 9:55. So thanks for joining us. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes with another segment.
See?